All right, children, settle down. Settle down. Come on. We only have 2 days to get this right. Come on. All right, I need my boys on the left, and I need my girls on the right. All right, you already know the dance move, but I need you guys to focus. Black History Month's coming up. You got to do a great job in this performance, okay? All right, boys, I need you to do your monkey dance. Arms up high. Arms up high. Come on. There we go. Girls, move your hips.
Place by Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with my co-host Earlene Anthony coming at you from Skid Row Studios. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. Listen to us live or download our show and any past show by Googling in skidrow.la and hit Qumran Report. This week on the Qumran Report, we will talk to Darcelle from the hit classic TV series Solid Gold and actress, singer Sydney Wayne Davis. We also have in the studio here Linda
Fiaga.
Linda Fiaga. We got Linda in here with us also. But first we have on the line, I think we have Eric. We'll be talking to Judy Bowman a little later. We have Eric, and they have a new show entitled Spotlight on Books coming up here at Skid Row Studios this Sunday, September 15, 2013 at 6 o'clock p.m. Eric, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, Melvin.
Hi, nice Eric.
To yeah, good to hear from you.
Hi.
Eric, what is Spotlight on Books about?
Judith Bauman and I have put together a program to celebrate the written word and keep the spirit alive of book reading.
Mm-hmm. Book reading.
Yes, celebrating new voices out there in the literary world.
Look, what do you think? What is the effect of the internet on book reading? Have it changed a lot?
It's changed everybody's habits. Reading online. I don't know. I'm old school, but I like reading books, but. And having the feel of the book in my hand and just feel more connected with the author. But literature still carries on the internet, just a little harder to get get the big picture.
I know some of the authors that you guys is planning on talking about is the classic writer Richard Wright.
Would
that be the basic format of the show? You'll be talking about some old authors and some new authors on the scene also?
That's right, Melvin. We'll have, readings from classic authors, and we'll be inviting actors and actresses to kind of sing up the words for us. And then we'll be inviting new authors and possibly even playwrights to come and join us. And introduce the audience to new works and remind them of favorites.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll be hearing from Judy a little bit later on in the show, talking about probably after the community calendar. Can you tell us again the exact starting date of the show? I think it's this Sunday, right? It's the first show?
That's right. Sunday, September 15th at 6 p.m.
On Skid Row Studios.
Skid Row Studios. That's
yeah.
Right.
All right, Eric, thank you very much for taking the time. We'll talk to Judy a little later on in the show.
Yeah, that's great. I really appreciate it, Melvin.
All right, thank you, Eric.
Okay.
All
right. Okay, take care.
Okay, that's Eric talking about the new show coming up, Spotlight on Books. Now, I'm delighted to have with us in the studio Darcell, the lead dancer from the classic hit TV series Solid Gold. Darcell is best known for her role as principal dancer and star of the hit TV series Solid Gold. She danced her way into our homes with the fitness, vitality, and sensuality of a confident woman. Darcell's presence on Solid Gold brought diversity to national television and inspired women dancers and people of color to dream bigger. Her success continued in film and on Broadway. Xando, The Great White Hope, Mommy, Scrooge, the last two married couple, Night Shift, Funny Girl, and Jesus Christ Superstar. Mm. Darcell, welcome to the Coonrad Report.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Let's start off. Can you tell our listening audience about your background and how did you get off into dancing and performing?
Well, I started when I was 3 years old, and my mom said all I did was jump from dresser to dresser, dancing and jumping on the bed. And, you know, it just was a passion then that I didn't know about. And when I became 3 years old, I went to a dance studio called, it was in Squirrel Hill and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I started doing recitals and the whole thing and never stopped dancing since then. And I started professionally at 13, and the rest is history.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh, great artistic town.
Yeah.
I think August Wilson was back there during that time. Also, can you tell us, how did you get involved with Solid Gold?
Solid Gold. Well, you know, I was a dancer, a very well-known dancer before Solid Gold, because I did a lot of other things. And when Solid Gold came up, it was good for me because it was what I was doing. It was my kind of style of dancing. Mm-hmm. And when the choreographer called and said, we're working on a new show, but we want to do the pilot. And at that time, I thought I didn't want to dance anymore. I just wanted to choreograph. But when I got on the show, we did the pilot. And then I thought, oh, this is going to give me a chance to choreograph and I won't have to dance. But I was the only black girl on the show. And when the ratings came in, it was like, okay, we're going to make you an offer. You can't refuse so we can do the show. And I was like, but I don't want to. I want to choreograph. I don't want to dance. And they said, no, you're going to dance on the show. So that's what happened. Mm-hmm. I danced and... from there, it's all history. I was always the black girl with the braids on Solid Gold.
Flipping that braid.
Yeah. It's okay. But, you know.
Were you choreographing also?
Yes, I did. The closing number I did. And, you know, it got to a place where we had so many beautiful dancers. And we had to do 20 countdowns, an opening, a closing. Everybody started participating. You know, it just was that kind of show. It's like, hey, go over there and give me an eight. Go over there and give me an eight, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had told Brad, who was our producer, why don't we just individually bring, you know, the dancers forward? Because the mail that was coming in was supposed to be for the entertainers. And it was all for the dancers. You know, I was getting mail from everybody. I even had prisoners going to take me to dinner. I was sending posters. And, you know, it was like, it was coming from everywhere. But we all had our fans. We all had our fan base, you know. But seems like they never forgot the black girl on Solid Gold. Mm-hmm. I was like, yes.
Tell us a little about your training. Where did you get your training?
Well, you know, that's the thing that was so interesting, because everybody thought I wasn't going to make it in the business because I wasn't trained. Mm. I was just gifted and didn't know it. Mm. I was anointed and didn't even know what anointing was, mm-hmm. you know? And if it wasn't for the hand of God, you know, people would have just knocked me down, because the New York dancers were beautiful. Mm. I mean, it was like, I wish I could have did the things they did. Mm-hmm. You know, and I told those girls, you better get up off your knees. I was like, you're going to be crippled by the time you get 50, you know, because I was just tipping in my heels, being lovely. And they thought, oh, you're just trying to be too lovely. You're never going to make it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, here comes a show like Solid Gold where you had to be lovely and wear heels and strut. And I was like, uh-oh, this is my kind of show, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I broke a lot of faces back in the 80s.
How about the competition behind the scene? Is it very competitive in the world of dance?
It is, you know, but I didn't know it, because I was just good at what I did, and mm-hmm. I enjoyed it, and I had passion for it. But dance is like any other job. You know, you get in line, you stay, you go, you stay, you go. Rejection is a bad thing, you know? And these girls get rejected, and it's like, it's not that you're not good. You know, you're just not good for this particular part. But, man, you take it so. And for me, I was always a working dancer because, you know, back in the day, they only used one light girl, one dark girl. Uh-huh. And it was always me and Candy. it was like, yeah, I'm here, you know? Uh-huh. So it was just like that. You know, nowadays a little different. But the dancers today, you know, mm-hmm. man, mm-hmm. I don't know. I wouldn't make it today.
Now, did they actually tell you that?
Who?
In terms about...
No, we're gonna use to tell me. They all knew it. We all knew it. That's why when they saw us, it was either one dark or one light. So it was going down. Oh, no, that wasn't a secret.
Yeah. Now, how about the physical? Because sometimes I used to watch dancers train, and I watch them get all up on their toes and all. How about in terms of the ankle?
It just hurts. It just hurts. It just hurts. You
it's really
ache.
Physically demanding.
You have to understand, I was in 6-inch heels. Uh-huh. You know, to get those girls in 4 and 6-inch heels was like, you know, stabbing me in the back. But, you know, I'm always like... Uh-huh. You know, I think comfort is okay, but it's nothing like looking good for that hot second. I'd rather have a 6-inch heel with a strap around my ankle looking good than a little old 2-inch flat shirt. You know, and I was like, come on, girls. You know, I didn't realize you had to teach girls how to be sexy, you know, and how to work it. You know, mm-hmm. I was like, come on, you know. Mm-hmm. But I just enjoy being able to just be myself. I finally got into something I could just be me, mm-hmm, you know? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Now, let me ask you this about the male dancers, because I used to have some of my relatives who was off into, I remember one who was a great athlete, football mm-hmm. player, but he wanted to be a dancer. Mm-hmm. And they always told him that if you get off into dancing as a male, they're going to think that you're gay or something.
Yeah, that must be the same guy I know. Because he was a football player. And he went to go see West Side Story. And he saw those guys up there, West Side Story. Dun, dun, dun. He was like, that's what I'm going to be. He said, I'm going to be a dancer. And mm-hmm. I thought, too, how do you go from football to dancing? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's beautiful. It's an art form. You know, everybody has an expression. Why can't you just when a man wants to be show his feminine side, we got a problem with that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing wrong with seeing the man express himself so beautifully, you know, and it's just his female side. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have our male side. I think we've all got it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's beautiful for a man to step out and just express himself, you know. And I know they say most of them are gay, and most of them, so what? You know? It's just, that's who they are. Mm-hmm. And they're beautiful, and you know what? Can't touch it.
Mm-hmm. How about tap dancing? You tap?
Yeah, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Oh, this just wasn't my thing. It was my sister. Mm-hmm. My sister and I did tapping together, and she was always mad because she had to play the boy, and I was the girl. But tapping was okay. That just wasn't my thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, you got to do it all, and that's why I tell dancers, do everything. Mm-hmm. And I was a do everything. Mm-hmm. You know, be good at what you do. Go out and learn everything. Nowadays is a little too gymnastics for me, because if I had to do all this flipping that these girls do today, oh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, but it's what it is.
Mm-hmm. One more question before we have a caller on the line. Oh, wait, let's move to the caller now. Who am I speaking with?
That for me now?
Who am I speaking with?
This is Daryl Poston.
Okay, Daryl, you have a question for Darcell.
Well, I just wanted to congratulate her. I mean, we go back, back to junior high school, John Muir Junior High.
Daryl!
And I don't know, I don't remember Butlong Avenue, but I know from John Muir, and mm-hmm. she also did choreography for my brother's group. His name was Flakes, and he did the choreography for the background girls in the group, and I just wanted to commend her and... let her know that we haven't forgot her.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. You know, we were just talking about being a legend. I didn't know I was a legend until my kids, you know, I teach children, and they ran in the room and they said, oh, Miss Darcell, we looked you up on Facebook and you're a legend. Oh, really? But, you know.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it's okay.
Do you have a question for Darcell?
Well, I just want to know, since that particular time, basically, what are her plans? I heard her saying something about the difference in the dancing now, and I know she's done it all. Like she mentioned tap dancing. I think I remember her doing some stuff on her toes in junior high school, and I thought that was amazing. But... it was just the idea of what is it for her now? You know, one of the things I do love is that she mentions the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I appreciate that 100%. And but I would like to know, what is she doing now? What are her plans, you know, in the future?
Wow, you know, I don't know, because I don't know the future. You know, I just like get up and just say thank you.
I'm just
happy to just, you know, to be able to share with other women. You know, I have a group, and we're like called Seasoned Beauties, you know, because,
All right.
you know, because I got some ladies that can still put it down, you know, and I always tell my young girls, I'm gonna hit this floor one time. And when I get up, don't ask me to hit it again. You know, so I still have a passion for what I do. I do have some things, you know, in the making, but I'm always looking for something new, always looking for something different, always want to reinvent myself. I don't want to just be known as this anybody, you know. Just do my thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate all that you've done and what you did with Solid Gold and your legacy and all. And it's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, good. Thank you so much for bringing up John Muir Jr. Did you know my girlfriend Gail?
I don't know. I was really mostly with your brother, Richard.
Oh, gotcha. You know he passed.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, he passed about a year ago.
Oh, my. I'm sorry
to
hear.
Know.
Yeah.
My baby brother. Yeah. Wow,
I stay in contact. I talked to Beverly on Facebook, gotcha. Beverly Blackshear a lot.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl,
yeah.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Now, Darcell, what are your thoughts on the state of dancing now as an art form?
Well, you know, man, you know, my view of dance has opened up so much, and especially when I started dancing in the church, you know, and because God just opened up dance to me, and I was so limited to what I thought dance was. I didn't know that it was part of healing. I didn't know that you can dance and put your foot on somebody and call that sickness out. I didn't know about any of that, you know. And when it became something so precious to me, I just didn't know how to do it, or was it okay? And I've even now, I don't dance that much in the church because now wherever I am is the church. Mm-hmm. And now when I I could just break out and start dancing at any given time. I teach praise and worship in my classes. I just put the music on and we just have church, you know, mm-hmm. just dances, mm-hmm. you know. So there is a freedom that comes when you just free to be who you are. You don't have to have a step. Just cut loose, you know? Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is dance. Your mm-hmm. own expression. Because you got a good expression. God said everything he made was good. And not just good, very good. Mm-hmm. So whatever you got, give it. Do mm-hmm. it. It's good. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn that.
Okay. The next question that I would like to ask you is, what is your process for... Oh. How important is dancing to exercise and fitness?
Oh, it's very good. Actually, I'm doing dance in the pool now. We do aqua dance. And one of the ladies came with her praise report and said, you know, my blood pressure has gone down. You know, the joy. You don't know what I get when I look out in my class and people are smiling and people are happy. You know, and it's like you don't, what that, they say for that hour, I can take this for the rest of the day and just dance. Because dancing isn't just while you're in class, you know. Mm-hmm. When you're walking around in this studio, you're dancing. Every bit of movement is dancing, you know. So you don't have to just, we talk with our hands, we're slinging and swinging. Mm-hmm. Everything is a dance.
Now, do they get off into jogging to prepare also?
Endurance? It's interesting. In my day, we just took dance classes. Mm-hmm. We didn't know about a gym. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when I started going to a gym, I thought, wow, these people are fit. These people are working out, slinging stuff. You know, we were just hanging on the bar, lifting our legs. But I did jog. I would do 5 miles, especially for Solid Gold. Mm-hmm. You know, we jogged 5 miles. You know, we would swim. We went the extra mile because we had to stay in them little outfits. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't going to get any new ones. So them little tiny outfits, it's like, whoops, you know, you gain a pound. It's like, ugh, you know, we have to switch each other's outfits here. You wear this one this week, you know.
Now, how did you prepare? What was your process for preparing when they brought you an idea or a number that they wanted to do?
If I take myself out and become a character, and I always think about what that character would do in this particular dance or with this particular... So that's why I had so many different characters on Solid Gold. I was playing all these people, mm-hmm. and people thought I was this only sex symbol and all this. I wasn't none of that. You know, the guys would come back to the green room trying to talk to me, and I'm like... And they're like, oh, you're not what we thought you were. I said, well, where'd you think I was? You know, because my character was this sex symbol, you mm-hmm. know. And I just like playing different roles, you mm-hmm. know, just to see.
Because I always wondered about, in terms of dancing, do someone bring you some music and you develop the dance around there or just the opposite?
Could be both. With a concept. You could be both. You could bring me mm-hmm. music just like. The music you were playing in the beginning of the show, I already mm-hmm. had a dance. You know, you start seeing things. You see people. You see props. You know, you hear the drums. You start creating. I'm always, even in my sleep, it's like, God, can I go to sleep now? Please, please. And before I can shut my eyes, I'm seeing something. You know, mm-hmm. when you're a visionary, you're always hearing a song. You're always hearing something, seeing something. There's ideas all the time, so I don't sleep too much. I'm always creating.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is, just a couple more things, what is dance ministry and praise dancing? Can you talk about that for a while?
Well, for me, mm-hmm. It's a ministry. It's a different dance than I would do if I was just in class, you know. It's a message that I get from God, and I can dance. The dance will come through me. His message comes through, you know. And it's just like him talking. And there is a prophetic dance where the word will go out in the dance and I can literally prophesy in the dance, mm-hmm. you know. And it's just a beautiful experience. It's like a out-of-body experience. But I tell you, every time I do it, I'm changed. And God told me he would heal me from the inside every time I would go forth. So a lot of people say, oh, dance isn't a ministry. Mm-hmm. Well, who said? God said that I have the feet that preach. Mm-hmm. And he said, and you preach the good news. You just do it differently. Because when I used to go out, I used to get intimidated because these women would come out with fire out their mouth. And they just going. I was like, oh, boy, I know I need to go somewhere and sit down. I was like, God, what am I going to do?
Yeah, because, mm-hmm. You know, my father was a Baptist minister. And my mom's come out of a holiness church. Mm. And I remember they used to dance Ooh. All up and all throughout the church. Was that the dance ministry too?
Yeah, but you know, when they thought it was a fixed kind of thing, you know, you shouldn't come out with it fixed. You know, well, God's organized. I mean, God doesn't, you know, he doesn't just come out and throw stuff at you, you know. But I don't rehearse because when I would go out before, you know, all the Carolyn Harrells and the BAMs and all these wonderful women of God, I would just go up and stand there and just say, okay, what do you want me to do? It's like, and his message could be on love or whatever, and I would just begin to dance. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until an apostle saw me at Candy Staten's meeting, and he said, I've never seen anything like this. And I was one of the ones that didn't accept the dance, but would you come to my church and teach this?
Okay. I think I got Judy Bowman on the line. We'll talk to her in a minute, but your book, mm-hmm. Darcell Solid Gold, can you tell what's that about?
It's my autobiography. Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to leave something for my children and my grandchildren and whoever. All my children. I think I have more spiritual children than I do. But, you know, it's kind of nice to leave something behind, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm glad I did it for my children. They had a better understanding about mommy and daddy. Mm-hmm. Some questions that you can't ask. You
okay. Mm-hmm. Judy.
Hello, Melvin.
Hey, Judy, how you doing?
I'm good.
We're sitting here talking with Darcell from Solid Gold.
I'm enjoying hearing the conversation about dance and energy renewal.
She has a book, too. She may end up on your show talking about the book. We also got Sydney sitting here.
No kidding.
Hi, Judy.
Now, we talked to Eric early. We talked about some of the basic information about the show coming up. Did you bring a little short piece to read from the show? Can you talk about what you got in mind for Spotlight on Books?
I do have a short piece, if you can indulge me a few minutes. I hate to read it fast, but I can certainly do that. This is a short story from the continent. This is from Botswana. A writer living in Botswana has written a story, and, you know, I thought it could give your listeners a little bit of an idea of what we're trying to do with short and sweet pieces.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, if you're ready, this is by Lori, I'll try to pronounce her last name, Kamwitsili, and her short story is called The Empty Space on the Paper. So if you're ready, I'll just start.
We're ready.
She's all right. She starts the story. I remember how I sat huddled, my arm around my brother on the corner of the sofa. The man who brought the news wore a black coat that held the cold from outside. His hat hung in his hands in front of him and dripped rainwater onto the wooden floor. As the water collected in a little pool at his feet, he told my father that it was over. My father listened in silence because he had been told that was how grown-up men accepted such news. He nodded his head until the man stopped speaking and turned to go. Thank you for coming in person. That was very thoughtful of you, my father said at the door. The man stopped. I nearly forgot. Then he came back into the house and stood next to me and my brother. He reached into the pocket of his cold coat and pulled out a folded paper, and he said, "She told me to give you two this." We looked at each other. Thomas reached out his small hand and took the paper from the man. Then the man in black left. I was 12, and Thomas was 8. We were old enough to know what was going on. We'd been waiting for the day for some time. Everyone was. It wasn't every day that they hung your mother, especially in our small town. When the man in black left, Daddy sat down on one of the straight back chairs at the oak dining room table. He sat silently with his hands hanging at his side, staring straight ahead at the blank wall. I took Thomas's hand and we went upstairs to my bedroom. We sat on the edge of the bed and Thomas started crying quietly. If Daddy hears you crying, he'll be angry, I said dry-eyed. Daddy's strict rules about girls and boys didn't allow for crying from Thomas. I looked at the note still clutched in his hand. I was scared of it. What did she want to say to us? We were only children. I wondered if she remembered that. With shaking hands, I reached out for the paper. I tried to think of Mama. It had been a long time since we'd seen her. Once her appeals were finished, she begged Daddy to stop taking us to the prison on visiting day. He'd go alone, and we'd stay out at Aunt Carmen's. He'd come home the next day, his face pale, his clothes smelling of beer. Aunt Carmen, Daddy's older sister, always said the same thing. The trip go okay? Sure did, Daddy'd say. Then we'd come back home and it would be 2 or 3 days before Daddy's skin would go back to its right color and he'd talk normal, not as if somebody had handed him the lines. So sitting on my bed with Thomas crying next to me, I tried to conjure up Mama's face. I wanted a picture of her face in my mind before I read the letter, but it wouldn't come. The only thing I saw, picture clear, were her hands. No matter how much I tried, only her hands were there. The short fingers with thick, wrinkly knuckles. She always said they were the ugliest part of her. I never thought they were ugly, though. To me, they looked friendly and used. Later, after the execution, I used to wish Thomas or I had gotten her hands so that I could see them once in a while. But we had my father's hands with long fingers and small, tidy knuckles. It's funny how little irrelevant details remain, things like the color of the paper. It was off-white, almost yellow, with blue lines drawn on it, like a sheet torn from an old exercise book. The writing was slanted to the left, and all the letters were tall and thin, as if space were a problem, even though it wasn't because most of the page was empty, only the one line across the top. I often hoped she meant to write more. Maybe somebody stopped her, or she couldn't find the right words, and then it was too late to fill the page as she had intended. I think that when I'm being charitable. I was thinking of Mama's friendly hands when I opened the yellow paper torn from the exercise book. I saw her picking up the pen and writing in that odd way she had, gripping the pen tightly and writing downwards from the top of the line. I read the words out loud so Thomas could hear them through his tears. Forget me and all the sadness I brought you. That was it. No to my wonderful children at the beginning or I love you at the end. I turned the paper over to check the other side. Nothing. I sat for a minute. I thought maybe it had not been intended for us. Maybe the man in black got it wrong. Maybe this note was for somebody else and our note was somewhere out in the rain in the pocket of his cold coat. As Thomas's crying grew louder, I accepted that the man in black wouldn't have got such an important thing wrong. I took the yellow paper in both of my hands and tore it in two. Then I tore it again and tore and tore and tore until it was nothing more than pieces, no more words, no more hopes for something more, just yellowed pieces with a few drops of ink, a spot here, a spot there, incoherent and harmless. Then I held the pieces above my head and let them rain onto the floor where they fell like confetti at a party.
Okay.
Wow.
Thanks, Judy. That's a good...
Great.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. Also, one little quick thing before I let you go. We were talking to Darcelle a little earlier about hopeful for the possibility of Ben and Danny doing some kind of fundraiser over there, bringing her over there at the Roby. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be
a
something?
A dance production.
Yeah. Okay,
well,
Judy.
Everything is possible, and, you know... all we can do is, try to make it happen. And it seems like reasonable people make reasonable things happen. So I'd be happy to explore that more.
Okay, Judy. I'm going to let
you
go.
Well, nice talking to you, and thank you for letting me preview the Spotlight on Books show a little bit, Melvin. I sure appreciate it. And thank you, ladies, for letting me jump in the middle of your conversation.
Thank you. Looking forward to Sunday.
All right, bye now.
All right, Judy Boldman. Now let's move over and talk to our other in-studio guest, Sydney Wayne Davis.
Sydney Wayne Davis.
Yeah, Sydney Wayne Davis. She's an actress and singer and part of the Roby Theater Company. She has performed in the Roby production of River Niger, Transition, Anna LaCosta. As a singer, she has toured and recorded with artists such as Marvin Gaye, Donna Summers, Ray Charles, Barry White, Joe Cocker, Stevie Wonder, Marilyn McCoo, and Billy Davis Jr. Welcome to the Coonrod Report.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Look, first of all, let's see, can you tell our listening audience about your background? How did you get off into acting and singing?
Well, kind of like Darcelle, I was gifted, and my parents saw it. You know, my dad used to say, Sydney is nothing but an actress. And my mother really, I think, nurtured my singing quality. And I was free to be myself. And when I started at a little small church in Ohio, I was free to sing. And the mothers in the church kind of surrounded me. Said, oh, that girl, give her a solo. So I didn't have that competition in the beginning. I had a good foundation of loving people supporting me. And I sang in school. I was in the glee club. I was in choir. When I graduated college, I started teaching school, and I used to sing to my students, and my students kicked me out. They said, Miss Davis, you sing too good. You need to go to Hollywood, girl. What you doing here? And I listened to them. I moved out to Los Angeles 6 months later. It was just the grace of God, but that's another long story, but I was on tour with Marvin Gaye. And the mention of that one man's name opened up other doors as a backup artist with Ray Charles, Barry White, Joe Cocker. And for the last 15 years, I've been singing with the wonderful duet Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr., and who are also Christians who are entertainers. And it's been just a loving family for me, being a Christian and being in entertainment. And all along the way as a singer, I was still acting a little bit and writing, being out here in Hollywood, do a little movie thing here, a little backup job here. But I wanted to become more serious with acting when I met Ben Guillory, who's my coach mm-hmm. and the artistic director of the Roby Theater. I saw him in a one-man play performing as Paul Robeson. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away that one person could be on a stage and had me totally captivated by what they were doing and saying, and I got the story. And it opened up many opportunities for my mind to think, and I thought, you know, I sing, I write songs, and that's the way I know how to write a 3-minute story, but I want to know the more process of storytelling, and I come from a family of storytellers. Mm-hmm. My dad, my mom, my sisters, they all had a way of telling a story. And so when I worked with Ben Guillory, the first thing he said to me was, don't act, be. Mm-hmm. And that resonated with me. And so I've been with the Roby Theater for many years now, mm-hmm. learning my craft.
And Toledo, Ohio?
That's where I went to college, Toledo, mm-hmm. Ohio. And I was born in West Virginia, grew up in a little town called Kenton, Ohio. Mm-hmm. It's where I really grew to learn my talent. And when I went to school, University of Toledo, I was in music theater, mm-hmm. Which I think combining acting and singing was music theater. I have a strong background in music theater.
Yeah, I remember this minister, he ran Thomas Temple, Bishop Thomas. He was the keyboard player for Mahalia Jackson, one of the greatest keyboard players I ever heard in my life. Mm-hmm. We talked a little with the Roby, how you got involved. Now, what are your thoughts on the state of African-American theater today?
I think that in Los Angeles, it's really growing. I don't think people realize how much theater is in Los Angeles. And what I'm excited about is, especially with African-American artists, we are learning to tell our stories. Mm-hmm. You know, we're picking up the pen, we're picking up computers, we're writing, we're allowing ourselves to be inspired by our communities. And I think that is the future of it. It starts with the pen. It starts with the words. It starts with us telling our stories. And we have seasoned, wonderful actors who are learning the craft right here in this city. So I think Los Angeles is really taking off as mm-hmm. far as in African-American theater.
Now, speaking, you were talking about the play. You saw the reading yesterday dealing with Dr. W.B. Du Bois. And he always emphasized, almost 100 years ago, the need for an African-American theater company and dance company. Yeah. They talked about that at the turn of the century. What do you think about the need for a national African-American theater company?
I think it would be wonderful because I think the arts are a way to teach. And the arts are the way to set an example. You know, so many young people looking at all these other rap artists we're putting out. Well, I shouldn't say rap. Some are good rap. But there's certain influences that the media projects that's not healthy. So I think when we rise up and use our artistic talents through singing, through dance, through writing songs, through playing music, through productions, they'll get the message. And our young people need to be a part of it because it gets them out of the streets and it gets them taking all that angst and, you know, let's create something with all of that.
Because, we had a national company in the 30s called the Federal Theater Project, and they had a national dance company, all kind of ethnic theater, Yiddish theater, Spanish theater, and they destroyed that because they said it was too many communists, so-called communists involved with it. What actors and singers influence you?
Well, singers, it's easy. I mean, so many that I've worked with. Marvin Gaye, when I first heard that voice, that was just satin. So I was so honored to work with him. Ray Charles, who I also got the opportunity. A pure genius who knew how to tell that story and placement of his voice and just bringing it all together. So many wonderful, like Tina Turner was a big inspiration because she's real. She's bringing the hardcore singing and dance, and she's not lip-syncing anything. So she
That's
was
right.
a big...
She was singing and dancing.
Singing and dancing. Etta James, I've been recently studying Etta James. I want to do a tribute to Etta James. She's just... I'm realizing just in recent year how amazing she was. And as far as actors, Ruby Dee, Sidney Poitier, Viola and Betty Davis have influenced me. I love Judi Dench and Anthony Hopkins. They had that history in Shakespeare, and I love what those English actors bring. Actors in my community, Vanessa Bell Calloway, Margaret Avery, and Ben Guillory. I learned from all of them.
And then how about some of the old classic actors like Rose McClinton? Florence Mills, who was a great dancer at the turn of the century. Let me ask you, what's your process for learning lines?
For learning lines, I combine what I do as a singer and learning lyrics. And learning lines, what I do, I will tape whatever the script is. I will tape it, and I'll have one where I have all the lines, and I'll do all the characters, and then I'll do another one where I just do the other people's characters and keep a little space for me, and then I practice with that, and that is my process. It's just my way of doing it. I do it like a recording artist. I got to hear it, and it works for me.
One more question, and then we're going to take a little break for a quick community calendar and then come back for our roundtable. And I also want to hear from Linda over there speaking. What do you think help actors that have a projection problem?
Well, for theater, it's important to hear the words. So if they do have a problem with projecting their voice, then there are skills. They need to go to a vocal coach. They need to take a class and just learn how to place your voice so that the audience can hear the words that the writer has written. It's just very important.
Now, you also write also. What do you like the best?
I just love it all. I can't say I like one better. Singing is just more natural, but it all is in one pool. Writing, I think, is what drew me to become more serious with acting, because when I started writing characters and I kept thinking of other actresses that could play the characters I was writing, I thought about, well, wait a minute, I think I want to play her. And that's what drew me back to class. And my most recent play that I'm working on is a work in progress, but I introduced it at the NAACP Theater Festival in 2011 called United Front. It deals with a family facing the threat of HIV and AIDS. This year at the festival, I introduced Act Two, and now I'm so inspired bringing it up and having other actors around me. Now I'm making it a full play.
Okay. Let's take a break for our community calendar, and then right. we'll come back more with our in-studio guests, and also Sydney's going to do a song for us.
This is the community calendar for the month of September. Monday, September the 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. Matter of fact, it should be going on now. Anna Broom presents the Anna Broom Room, featuring music, poetry, drama, and much more. Willis and Shantae will perform their play, Kiara and Window, that was performed at the NAACP 10-Minute Play Festival. The location is 216 East Alameda, Los Angeles. That's over in the Art District. This is a free event and free parking. And you can call Anna Broom, and hopefully she'll pick up at 213-909-3321. Tuesday, September the 10th at 5:30, this is tomorrow. The Veterans Community Theater will be in session again. And the location is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. That's at the corner of Santa Fe and Olympic. The Metro bus number 60 and 66 stops at the corner. The workshop is currently casting readers for the new show, Spotlight on Books. For more information, you can call 213-479-1764. And we ask you to please save the date, Tuesday, September the 24th at 8 p.m. This is the second in a series of fundraising events leading up to the second annual Los Angeles Stand Down. Drama Stage Qumran Veterans Community Theater Workshop and the Sana Play Reading Series present a stage play, History Lessons, written by Andrea Ross, and the musical guest for the evening will be Vicki Robinson. 7 p.m. will start the mix and greet, and History Lessons will start at 8 p.m. This is a free event and free parking. The location is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. For more information on this event, you can call 213-479-1764 or dramastage1@yahoo.com. Upcoming guests on the Qumran Report, Monday, September the 16th, will be vocalist Lisa Don Sheridan and also vocalist Vicki Robinson. Once again, this is a new show on the Skid Row Studios, Spotlight on Books, Sunday, September the 15th. 6 p.m. with Judith Bowman and Eric Bolmer. And if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. And the call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. Now I want to open up the roundtable discussion and get in our other guests over here. Linda, the question I want to ask is, how do we create more after-school programs for our young people involved in singing, acting, and dancing? There's a big need for that. Want to start off, Linda?
Yeah, well, funding needs to be a problem for this particular area. There's a lot of gifted and talented teachers out there, and I have been teaching children for over 30 years myself, and I work in community centers and do after-school programs, and the children absolutely love taking dance, and sometimes it's affordability is difficult for some. So if there was some funding that mm-hmm. could help, put people on the path.
So funding is the key. What do you think, Dawson?
I think funding is a big, big one because I work with the PTA and after-school programs, and I just don't know why people don't want to give to the arts. You know, it's better. It's doing better. But it just seems like that's where we're lacking. We'll put our money anywhere and everywhere. But when it comes to the arts and people, you know, they love coming. They love to watch it. They love, you know, but it takes a lot. And then, like Linda was saying, you don't want to pay for good people, you know, you want people that, you know, oh, I've been doing this for a couple of years, you know, and then you have some people who've been this in a lifetime. You don't want to pay them, you know. Mm-hmm. I always say, you know, arts people are always the lowest on the totem pole, you know, but we're the hardest working people.
Yep.
First thing that comes. How about you, Cindy? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think because of the lack of funds, I guess to get it started, we just have to volunteer our time, you know, to our community, and just. We just got to start, and it's probably going to start with that volunteer spirit first before the money comes. Yeah.
Okay, at this time, we Sydney's going to Sydney.
I love the melody.
It's going to sing a song, "Star Behind the Star."
Okay. I wrote this one. You know, when I was just 16, my father, Master Sergeant Charles Edward Davis of the United States Army, put a big bright star right on the front of my bedroom door. And my daddy told me, because my baby girl is a star. When I first knew I wanted to sing on stage, I used my hairbrush as my microphone, rehearsed every day, put my lamp on its side to create a spotlight. And in front of my mirror, I was a star for a night. I dreamed about the day I'd be a singing star. And to make it come true, I'd have to work very hard. So I studied my craft, and I moved to L.A. And from Sunset to Hollywood, I tore up the stage. I produced my own songs in a small studio. But one by one, all the labels said no. One record exec nearly broke my heart. He said that my voice was perfect for the background part. So I am a star behind the stars, and I'm still shining brightly in the distance. But who could see that I am a star behind the stars? And I'm still shining brightly in the distance. But who could see that I am a star? I was famous in a small part of the industry as that girl who could harmonize in any key. I confess to my friend that I still wanted more, so he snuck me backstage to the Grammy Awards. And back then, I looked a little bit like Janet Jackson, so nobody said a thing while I was standing in the wings. What I saw stage left took my breath away. They've just given a Grammy to Mr. Marvin Gaye. And then the press gathered around, and I couldn't move. And then his 9-year-old daughter said, "Hey, I like your shoes." She said, "Daddy, she's nice. Can she come with us?" He said, "Baby girl, whatever you want." So I am a star behind a great star. And I'm still shining brightly in the distance. But can you see that I too have a light that shines so bright? Can you see me shining? And I'm still shining brightly in the distance. But who can see that I am a star?
Beautiful. Thank you. Cindy, can you quickly give us your contact information?
Yes, I can be reached at www.facebook.sydneydavis. Also, my website is sydneywaynedavis.com. cydney.com, and that's C-Y-D-N-E-Y.
Okay. Darcells, what is your contact information? Okay, Linda.
You can find our cell at our website at www.darcellsolidgold.com. You can find her as well on Facebook as Darcell and Darcell Leonard. And you can also follow her on Twitter at SexiesBack1.
Okay. All right, then. Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to Darcell, Sydney Wayne Davis, Linda. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, Stitcher, and SkidRow.LA. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with Willis and Shantae performing Better Way.
All right, children, settle down. Settle down, come on. We only have 2 days to get this right, come on. All right, I need my boys on the left, and I need my girls on the right. All right, you already know the dance move, but I need you guys to focus. My kids are not sleeping up. You gotta do a great job in this performance, okay? All right, boys, I need you to do your monkey dance. Arms up high. Arms up high, come on. Here we go. Girls, move your hips. That's right, move those hips.
Looking for a better place.
To the door, what you wanna do? Do you want some hardcore? Do you like it raw? South Olive, downtown LA, Skid Row Studios, motherfucker.
Hey, this is Eddie Solis, producer and host of Los Angeles Nista. Make sure you listen to the show live every Monday night, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at SkidRowStudios.com. And make sure you download the Skid Row Studios app or your iPhone.
Many have tried to replicate, many have tried to imitate, but there's only one true underground show. You have called it the real deal in underground extreme music. The Jimmy Cab's Very Manic Show, only on Skid Row Studios every Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Skid Row Studios.